Plus 49.
Welcome y bienvenidos. I am Sir D'Arteaga, and this is another episode of Plus 49. Today, we will talk with Jenna Davis. She comes from Canada, and she's the founder of Life in Germany. But before we get to hear from her, let's start with the highlights of the week. Probably most of you have already had one donor at least in your life, especially if you live in Berlin. And as similar as the Currywurst, it has been a debate who invented the Döner. Yet, the Döner kebab history dates back to the 17th century, but it secured its place in modern Germany cuisine during the 1920s through Kadir Nurman, who had a stand here in Berlin, and it's officially named the inventor of the Döner. Today, it is estimated that Germans consume 1.3 billion Döner annually, with Berlin alone devouring 400,000 each day, generating an impressive 7 billion euros in annual sales nationwide. This last week, the International Döner Federation, based in Turkey, has made a significant move to ensure that this iconic sandwich maintains its authenticity and quality across Europe. The Federation has requested that the European Union protect the term Döner, similar to the regulations applied to certain foods like olive oils, cheese, and beers. If approved, this would mean that any sandwich using the name Döner would have to meet strict standards before being sold. According to the Federation, a true Döner must A. contain beef or lamb matured for at least 16 months. B. seasoned with a specific selection of herbs and spices. The meat must be sliced from the top to the bottom of the spit with a 55 cm knife into cuts between 2 and 5 mm thick. Adhere to specific guidelines for the distance between the meat and the grill. The goal is to have Döner recognized as a tradition specialty, ensuring that every bite you take meets these high quality standards. The Federation has officially submitted its request to the EU, which now has 6 months to decide on the proposal. If accepted, Döner shops across Germany and Europe will need to comply with these new specifications or consider renaming their products. For Döner enthusiasts, this could mean a more consistent and authentic experience every time you indulge in this delicious meat. The move aims to honor Döner's rich history and cultural significance, ensuring its legacy continues for generations to come. So, what do you think about the proposal to protect Döner as a tradition specialty? The last couple of days have given us a nice summer feeling in the capital. And between the nice weather, the Olympics, and almost everyone on holiday, we're also feeling urlaubsreif. But for those who are staying, one thing that always caught the attention of the expats is the lack of air conditioning here in Germany. So why do Germans don't like air conditioning? To start, we need to consider Germany's temperature climate, which features to mild to warm summers and cold winters. Traditionally, air conditioning wasn't even considered necessary here because of the moderate climate. Over the years, Germany have adapted to their environment in ways that don't really rely on air conditioning. Also, cultural attitudes play a significant role. Germans have a strong focus on sustainability and minimizing environmental impact. Many view air conditioning as an unnecessary energy consumer that contributes to climate change. Instead, they prefer alternative cooling methods like fans, shadings, and natural ventilation. The concept of Frischluft or fresh air is highly valued. You will often see windows open in homes and offices, even in winter, as Germans believe that natural air circulation is healthier than artificial cooling. Architecture in Germany further reduces the reliance on air conditioning. Buildings are often designed to be energy efficient, with features like thick walls, isolated windows and shutters that help maintain comfortable indoor temperatures. Traditional German homes also incorporate design elements that promote cross-ventilation, allowing air to move into the building naturally. Economic factors also influence the limited use of air conditioning. High energy prices make the running cost of air conditioning a significant consideration. Germans tend to be frugal and avoid unnecessary expenses, extending this mindset to energy usage as well. While air conditioning isn't a prevalent in Germany, as in some other countries, it is a choice deeply rooted in environmental consciousness, cultural values, and historical practices. As climate patterns shift, we may also see more Germans opting for cooling technologies that align with their sustainability goals. In case you need some cooling during these hot days, there's a great map in Google where it shows you where you can go into an air conditioning building here in Berlin. We are here today with Jenna. Jenna is from Canada and she's right now living in Düsseldorf, and she has this amazing webpage called Life in Düsseldorf, or actually Life in Germany. So hello, Jenna, and welcome here.
Hello. Thank you so much for inviting me on the call. I'm very excited.
We're also very excited to have you here, and especially you're an expert regarding Germany. So let's start. When you first arrived in Germany, what were your first cultural shocks and how did you master them?
So the big one, which is quite obvious, I think, for many, is the bureaucracy of just getting started. But you know what? I'm not even going to go into detail about that because everybody's going to figure it out at some point. The really, like, you know, I get there, it's my first day. There were about 100 different minuscule, very tiny culture shocks that I experienced that in the grand scheme of things are not big, but for my first day was quite wild, you know, like anything from the super massive toilet buttons or the fact that there's two buttons and nobody explains to you that one's for when you go number one, the other's when you go number two, you know, like the tipping culture, the bottle returns, the creaky floorboards, the oversized pillows, like the separate sheets on the bed, all of this just like smacks you in the face at once. That is the culture shock when you first get here.
I think the separate bed sheets, it is a big cultural shock because you're kind of with this romantic of the idea of, oh, I'm just going to cuddle. And then you're like, oh, no, we don't cuddle here.
Yeah.
So after so many years that you've been already in Germany, have you ever had this moment where you have find yourself thinking like, oh, I am that German now?
Absolutely. 100%. I just posted a YouTube video about, have I become a boring German? You know, my son calls me boring. And then I looked into it and thought, man, I am German. Like, yes, it has to do with the fact that I'm a mom now and I have responsibilities. It's not because I'm boring. It's because I'm really like, I've toned down, you know, I don't laugh as much. I don't come off as this like super in your face Canadian anymore as I did back home. But on top of all of that, I have to say, you know, like the stereotypical organized German mom who has her calendar booked out for the next 2 months, that's me. And then I sit down, I'm like, oh my God, like what happened to you, Jenna?
I'm laughing about that idea of having the calendar fully planned. Tell us, as a mom now, do you have any insider tips into life in Germany with kids?
Definitely. I've been here for 10 years now, and I've been in Germany for the last 5.5 years as a mom. And after living here in Germany for 5 years, I thought I had figured it all out, you know, but you really don't until you're deep into the topics of, I don't know, Schuluntersuchung, like going to the Gesundheitsamt, like Einschulung, Schulranz und Schultüte, all of these different topics. It's a lot to digest. So I have about a million tips, of course, that I could give. But I think the best thing that you could possibly do when you have kids in Germany is, Germany's a very good country to have children in. I feel very thankful and very, I appreciate it so much that we live here because there are so many opportunities for children. But the problem is, even though Germany offers so many amazing opportunities and amazing subsidies and support, it really takes a little bit of deep diving into figuring out, okay, what can I apply for? How can I figure it out? Like even on the topic of just Elterngeld, for example, like this parental benefit, you know, I had to hire somebody to figure out exactly how it worked. And that sounds crazy because I know I've been here 10 years, but it's true. You know, if you want to do it right, and if you want to benefit to your like maximum potential here, you need to get the support. And I was very stubborn with my first child and was like, no, I'll figure it out on myself, but all by myself. But in reality, finding the people who know what they're talking about in these different topics around children and even in regards to pediatricians or anything, you know, ask a German. It will be very, very beneficial. Don't be like me and be stubborn and not ask around to get started because there's so much here. You just really need to know how to access it.
You're married to a German, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. How's your German?
Yeah, es könnte besser sein. It's good. It's good. I can speak German fluently, no problem. The only thing is my grammar is awful. So got to get there one day. I just figured now that I'm a mom, I might just learn with my child who's going to the Grundschule.
I think I need to have a kid before that. We're talking with Jenna, and I would like to ask you, what brought you to create life in Germany?
Oh, there's a long way to explain this in a short way, but I'll try to sum it up. Basically, I originally started with lifeindusseldorf.com. I was a blogger before in the travel industry, so creating a blog was really pretty simple of a process for me. And I thought, I really need support myself, so what better way to do that than actually build a blog up called Life in Düsseldorf, which is where I had officially moved here in Germany and was ready to get settled and file my applications for my visas and all my paperwork. And I had so many questions. I wanted to be a freelancer. I wanted to know where to meet friends. I had a million questions and there was nothing on the web that I could find. So instead of me writing the blog, I set it all up. And then I contacted the experts and asked them, hey, did you want to write a blog post on this website in order to help not just me, but everybody else who speaks English and who doesn't find the resources that they need online? It went very well, much better than I expected. I am no longer a travel writer, to say the least, but it went so well that eventually I was just getting bombarded with questions, not only for Düsseldorf, but Germany in general. I was able to work with the Germany Tourism Board, for example, and travel to every single state across Germany. So I have very extensive understanding of all of the different cultures and the different types of people in Germany and what to expect. And not every city is for every person in Germany, right? So there's definitely the right city for you. It's just more about figuring it all out. And I thought, what better way to do that than to carry on and create Life in Germany? So while Life in Düsseldorf is really focused on this niche of just inspiring locals and visitors and expats to really make the best out of their time here in Düsseldorf, Life in Germany is more focused on getting these expats and immigrants and foreigners coming into Germany and really helping them with those first steps, holding their hand, taking them through our welcome program so that they feel entirely comfortable in our entire journey getting started here.
So you know how to speak Bayerisch.
I wish.
But regarding the questions that you always get, there are probably a typical two or three questions that they're always there. There are always people asking you the same thing.
Absolutely. Number one, before they even get here, they're asking about visas. They're asking about the processing times. And they're often getting their visas, they're moving over here, and then they need their residence permit. They don't receive the responses that they want. They contact me right away asking me, how do I get a hold of these immigration departments? Unfortunately, my answer to that is very similar. It obviously depends on a case-by-case basis. It depends on which city or which town you're living in. If you're in a smaller town, it's a lot easier to get in contact with the immigration office. You usually have one person dedicated to your file. In a city, that's the same case, but to get in contact with that person is very, very difficult. So in Düsseldorf, for example, it's all about how you format the email, making sure in the title it says urgent, what type of residency you're on, and that you're requesting maybe even a temporary residence permit for now while the other one might expire. And that's like one of the very common issues when you're getting started in Germany. The other one being about housing. They're like, okay, well, I need to find a house because I need an address because the bank is telling me I need an address. But if I don't have a bank card, then I can't pay for my apartment. I can't put the first and last month's rent down. And it's this vicious cycle. And so I will help people out of this cycle by really just going step by step, finding them a bank account that maybe doesn't require an address for the first few months of having the card. That's a big solution. There's also many, many other ways to get around it. It's just you have to know the right questions to ask, the right people to ask. So that's where most people come to me asking questions. And then more of a personal question is always, I'm really struggling. How on earth am I supposed to make friends here? And my biggest tip is always, you need that confidence. You really do. You have to. It doesn't matter if you don't speak a word of German, even if you can just say, Ich heiße Jenna, you know, it's one step in the right direction. The Germans, they really appreciate it. And fact of the matter is, a lot of people understand English. So when you're struggling at the beginning, you can get by just speaking the English language and use this confidence to join different clubs. I was terrified. I wanted to join a football club, a soccer club, as we say in Canada, so bad. But I just was terrified every day thinking, how are they going to respond when we're running on the field and they're screaming at me in German and I don't know what they're saying? Like, I'm not going to be a very good addition to the team. And I kept telling myself this, and I wish that I hadn't. And that's kind of what I always tell people is, you know, don't make the same mistakes that I did. You need that confidence. And I don't know where you're going to pull it from, but pull it from somewhere, because that's how you're going to be able to thrive here.
Yeah, I think making friends is a very complicated situation. And of course, bureaucracy as well is another huge step. And I believe that a lot of things come from the idea that, or we already have expectations of Germany. When we're in our home countries, yeah, we believe that, oh, Germany is like this country. And I remember when I arrived in Berlin that in my idea, I was coming to one of the capitals of Europe. Mm-hmm. And when you arrived 10 years ago in Tegel, it was like, this is it? Like, this is the smallest airport in the whole world. So you do have a lot of expectations, but then you forget to remember that actually, I mean, the capital of Berlin, it was set in 1999. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a millennial capital, to be honest. And of course, the way that at least Mexico City, I mean, Mexico City is 25 million people moving around all the time. Here's 4 million. So for me, it is not a capital yet.
Yeah,
it's getting there. But anyhow, my question would be about this expectations. I mean, mm-hmm, before you moved here, you had them towards Germany, but yeah, probably now they have changed. What were them and where are they now?
That's a good question. I think it's always different based on the situation. So I never really grew up knowing much about Germany. I'm going to be honest, you learn about it in the history textbooks and they don't say very many good things about Germany. So I never even thought to come here. I never ever thought I would be speaking the German language fluently. Like, that's just so bizarre to me. But when I came, I think, you know, as a Canadian, people just think of Germany really as a tourist, and they say, oh, I want to visit the castles and the cobblestone streets and everything. And it's almost like you don't think anything else outside of this exists. And my first year here, I actually moved to Freiburg. So it really was exactly how I had envisioned it. Like, Freiburg's just this beautiful city in the south. It's sunny all the time. You've got the black forest surrounding you. It's just such a magical moment, until reality kicked in a year later and we decided to move to Düsseldorf because my husband's family lives here and his dad got sick and unfortunately passed away. And that kind of sent us in this downward spiral of, okay, now I have to figure out if I'm going to live the rest of my life here because my visa is expiring. We need to figure out, like, when are we going to get married? Do we even want to be together? The paperwork, the bureaucracy, everything. I never expected it. So then you're in this second year phase here in Germany, and I was miserable. Like, I wanted to give up. I couldn't give up because I loved my boyfriend at the time, now husband. You know, I didn't want to give up, but it just felt sometimes impossible to move forward. And then you get every now and again, you know, the really rude old German person yelling at you, and one old man with his cane fell down, and of course I ran to pick him up, and he just starts screaming at me, telling me, why do you expect I need help just because I'm old, blah blah blah. And it really, like, it got to me, like every interaction with every grumpy German, it really got to me. And then fast forward 10 years, my expectations changed again, and like how I perceive Germany changed again. We just did a YouTube video together actually on these Selbstverständlichkeiten, things that you should automatically understand, or that are, you don't even have to vocalize, you don't even have to talk about it. It's just typical here. It's just understood. And it's so true. Like, we deep dived into, you know, why do Germans say no all the time? And really, it doesn't, your perception of Germany doesn't really change until you actually dive in and really understand why do they say no, for example. Like, and when you first get here as a tourist, you think, oh, they say no to everything. They're so grumpy. They're in a bad mood. But it's not true. There's always some sort of root explanation to why people behave the way that they do here, you know, and it's not that Germans are grumpy. There's a lot more under the surface. And so I'm really thankful for having this opportunity to really like deep dive into that and understand the German culture more and share that with other people, because my expectations of Germany and my perceptions of Germany have entirely changed. Every now and again, I'm like, it would be nice if someone would just say sorry when they bumped into me, you know, or smiled at me on the street. But overall, you know, I'm so, so thankful to be living in Germany. My life here is so much better. The work-life balance is incredible here. There's so many amazing reasons to want to live in Germany. So,
yes, they are. Definitely they are. That's also why we're doing this program. And the idea in general of Surviving Berlin is also to create another environment to say it is actually not only surviving, it's actually thriving in Berlin, yeah, or in Germany. And before we leave you, you have almost 60,000 people following you on YouTube. Mm-hmm. You have amazing videos. Please take a look at them whenever you have the chance, those who are listening to us. But what are your loved ones? What are the topics, your Lieblings topics, so to say?
It's ever-changing. And that's the one reason why I love how I built up life in Germany and life in Düsseldorf, really, without realizing how I had built them up, was that I am constantly changing topics. The blogs and the vlogs and everything, all of the channels, they grow with me. So right now, my favorite topic is all about kids, you know? It's where to go, like the things we can do with children. On the Life in Germany blog, I'm often writing about, you know, understanding the Kita system, understanding the different words between like Tagespflege, Tagesmutter, Tagesvater, Kinderkrippe, like all these different words, and sharing those with our audience. So because I'm really in the thick of that right now, that's my passion project at the moment. Granted, in 5 years, it's going to be changing. You know, I've created a lot of videos right now about understanding the Schultüte, how to pack it, like all these great tips. So I just love the fact that it's ever changing with me.
Before we leave you, and before you ask our Germans your question, what are your key recommendations to survive and thrive in Berlin, or in Germany in general?
I think a lot of people are going to know what I'm about to say, and they might not like my answer, but the fact of the matter is, even if you're living in Berlin, learning the German language is how you're going to be able to jump from surviving in Germany to thriving in Germany. If you don't speak the German language, you're not going to be able to have these real, genuine relationships with people. Like, even if you want to open up your own business, you know, you want to step forward and do something new and exciting in this foreign country, if you don't know the language, it's going to be really hard to get there. So anything from joining sports clubs to making friends to starting your own business to even just getting by at the grocery store are in very specific situations, like going back to being a mom. My first Elternabend or parent evening or parent night, it was terrifying because it's all in German, like with a group of 50 people. They're not going to switch to English for you, right? So there's little aspects in everyday life where this German is so helpful, and that's really how you're going to be able to thrive.
Do you have a Lieblingswort? Do you have a favorite German word?
Ooh, that's a good question. I like Eichhörnchen because it's really cute. But my other one is, oh, I don't even know how to say it anymore. I'll have to save that one for another day. Something with Ochse. Let's stick with Eichhörnchen.
Let's stick with Eichhörnchen. What can people find in your website?
A whole lot of information, not only about getting started here in Germany, going through all the bureaucratic processes, finding a farm plan, setting up your dream life here in Germany and being able to save money by doing so, but also being able to find some fun tips and tricks to getting started, to exploring different areas of Germany, and really just being able to dive in and have some fun with getting started because it's not always easy, but that's what I'm here to help with.
Is it Düsseldorf and Berlin so different?
Absolutely. Berlin, I have a love-hate relationship with Berlin. Sometimes I go and it's sunny and everything works my way. And then the other time, like usually in the winter when I go, it's just overwhelming. I'm like, there's nothing to do, even though it's the huge city. And Düsseldorf really is, it's a city, but it also feels like a town. You know, you bump into people in the neighborhoods. It's extremely different.
Thank you so much, Jenna, for being here with us. And please remind us your webpage.
We've got lifeingermany.com as well as lifeindusseldorf.com, but it's Duesseldorf.
And you also have your YouTube channel.
Yes, we've got the YouTube channel for Life in Germany, which you can just search up Life in Germany for, and that should pop up, as well as the Instagram pages Life in Dus and Life in Germany underscore two.
So let's take a look at that, definitely. And if you have any questions about what to do in Düsseldorf and how to start your life in Germany, take a look at what Jenna does because I do believe she's done amazing things. It was lovely having you here with us at our podcast. Thank you again so much, Jenna, and hope to hear from you very soon.
Thanks so much for having me.
Plus 49. Ask a German.
Hey there, I'm Jenna, and my question for all the Germans would be, why is it so scary to say you're sorry, even when like you maybe just lightly bonked somebody? I don't mean it in a bad way. I'm just super curious because in Canada we overuse the word, and I think in Germany it's the opposite. It's underused. I've always wondered why we couldn't meet in the middle, but I'm very truly curious as to why people struggle so much with apologizing.
It may seem simple at first, just saying sorry when you're in the wrong. But Germans often find themselves to struggle with that. As a result, we often come across as rude and unfriendly for not apologizing directly. Sometimes is it as simple as that. After all, we Germans are known to be quite grumpy. Another obvious reason could be that we think we are always in the right, which also resonates with the German term Besserwisser or know-it-all in English. And while these generalizations may hold some truth, there's generally more to the issue. One of the primary reasons Germans may struggle with apologizing is a strong emphasis on personal responsibility and accountability within their culture. Admitting fault or expressing regret can be perceived as acknowledging failure or weakness, which many Germans find uncomfortable. Additionally, we place significant focus on efficiency and problem-solving. Instead of fostering a long and sincere apology, we prefer to concentrate on finding a solution and addressing the issue at hand. Due to this mindset, the importance of conveying empathy through an apology is often overshadowed. There's also a certain fear of misinterpretation associated with apologizing. Some Germans may worry that offering an apology could lead to misunderstandings or unintended consequences, further complicating the decision to express regret. This concern is particularly relevant when an apology is interpreted as taking full responsibility for a situation, even if the fault does not lie solely with one person. The context in which an apology is required also plays a significant role. While some Germans might find it easy to apologize to people with whom they have a close relationship with, they simultaneously avoid saying it at work. In professional settings, for example, they may worry that apologizing could undermine their authority or credibility. In personal relationships, on the other hand, concerns about escalating conflict or creating emotional discomfort may prevent the person from apologizing. So, while some Germans may indeed hold firm beliefs about their positions during disagreements, the reluctance to apologize is more nuanced than simply thinking they are right all the time. It stems from cultural values surrounding responsibility, fears of misinterpretation, social context, and a preference for efficiency.
This is the end of today's show here on Plus 49. My name is Sigrid Arteaga. We hope you enjoy it and thank you for spending your time with us. Till next time.